The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is proudly honored to be brought to you by Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. Big Barker therapeutic dog beds. Get yours right now at bigbarker.com/Ricky, and Big Barker will donate $50 to the Providence Animal Center and Kinetic Skateboarding. Get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show today, Sixers lose their second in a row at home despite a monster game from Embiid. Another, unfortunately, stupid update in the Markel Fultz saga we will have to talk about, but probably breeze through. Future Sixer Trevor Ariza gets traded to the Wizards and then untraded. Maybe Jabari Parker is available too. And another Jimmy Butler interview. Also, I have a jigsaw for Mike, one of the ones I'm most proud of. Before we get started, Fly the Process 4, less than 100 spots remain for Fly the Process 4. Last weekend in Minnesota, we're going to see Robert Covington and Dario Saric reunite them with Joel Embiid and TJ McConnell. I don't know how we're going to reunite them, but we're going to do it. We're going to have a good time in the process. You can reserve your spot for $150 is the only deposit you need, and then you can pay the rest of it through whatever payment plan you want. So just go to rightstorickysanchez.com. It's right there on the front page. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderous pair. There with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with Mike Levin's groin, doing the podcast all on its own this week.
Here we are. Just a groin and a groin's takes.
Yeah, just a guy in a groin. So if you have to rank these, most responsible to least responsible. Sixers roster, relatively thin, as we've noted several times on the podcast this year. I will give you three reasons for the thinness of it, and I want you to rank most responsible to least responsible. Number one, bad luck and circumstantial things like Markel Fultz, Zaire Smith, both being basically wasted roster spots at this point, and the Jimmy Butler trade being two guys for one guy. Two, a bad job this offseason by Brett Brown and GM collaboration prior to Elton Brand, who hasn't done anything wrong yet. And C, Brian Colangelo's 2.5 year reign of terror as Sixers general manager. What would you say is most to least responsible?
I think they're all tied.
Keeping up your streak of non-committal.
Yeah, well, I think if all of them happened,
yep,
and they're all to blame,
mm-hmm,
but the thing, like Colangelo was first, if we're going by timeline, mm-hmm, of those things, and he did a bad job getting any useful talent really out of the draft or free agency. Just kind of, I mean, Redick, whatever, middling,
yeah,
non-innovative.
I would say
signing.
I would say value. I would say there's not a ton of, even though Redick can play, the value proposition is imbalanced on him.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of cost and return, that's all I'd say.
Right.
You know that way you're. He didn't add no one, but the people he did add, like, you know, Simmons with the number one pick is like, you know, is that, I guess, just to move on from Colangelo. But
yeah,
yes,
yeah,
okay,
of course.
Yeah.
And then collaboration obviously got off, started a little bit on their heels after the Ringer story broke about Brian. But they did, you know, acquire Wilson Chandler and Mike Muscala, declined Korkmaz's option.
Signed Amir, signed JJ.
Signed Amir, signed JJ, the draft, that kind of thing. And then they could have adjusted, knowing that Fultz is, you know, questionable for the season, not a guarantee. And then Zaire's injury, et cetera, medical staff, you know, acquiring Justin Patton, who is like a lot of that. So I think it's it all kind of works in tandem. I think at the end of the day, it falls on the current regime to have adjusted to the hand they were dealt. And they certainly had enough time to now. Keeping a roster spot open, having two two-way guys who are at this point not ready to contribute, or not someone that Brett trusts enough to contribute. If you're not going to trade TJ for a first round pick or whatever, then you really don't need Demetrius Jackson for anything. Get a big bodied wing. There's so many big bodied wings that came out of nowhere to be useful contributors, and the Sixers have none of them as two-way guys. So I think it's all of it. I think everyone's to blame, including us.
I will take no blame.
I'll take some. and it continues to be a problem. We're into December. I've, you know, been team chill about a bunch of the stuff, about the depth. I think it's just not that hard to get useful guys as the season comes along. I think the Sixers are just waiting to hit on the guys they want to hit on. But at this point, you just need bodies that you're willing to put out there and absorb content, really? and not just, you know, play Embiid and Simmons, like, you know, 38 minutes and a loss again and again.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, the bodies don't even have to be alive. Wilson Chandler died 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and
poor guy.
Is able to play 30 minutes. I actually would mostly agree with you on in terms of responsibility. The Colangelo thing obviously puts them in a difficult position, because a lot of the times the guys that you have who are value guys are guys that you have acquired on rookie contracts and you re-sign, or, you know, like that's the Covington proposition, or even Dario, I think you could agree, based on his cost, was outperforming his cost at the time. And then it really puts them in a bad spot. But you could also then look at Chandler, Amir, and JJ and the ages and their trajectory, and it would be impossible not to guess that they would all decline. You know, they're all in the declining years of their career. So you know, those are three guys that that you have, what, 12 in JJ, 11 in Chandler, and then another 2 or 3 million in Amir, and they're all declining guys. So they had to make the Butler trade, I think, but you are losing a guy, just like total number of guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only thing I would disagree is that I do think it is harder to put together a, like, good rotation guys than you give it credit for. Like
I don't know. Look at a bunch of different teams. Look at the Pacers, who are a tough team. Definitely have an identity, sort of kind of similar, you know, Oladipo aside, kind of similar to the Doug Collins Sixers teams, I would say. Mm-hmm. More fun, better coach and stuff. But like in spirit, they have a bunch of guys that kind of just grind and play physical and stuff. And like Tyreke Evans, Corey Joseph, Sabonis, I like O'Quinn more than they seem to. I mean, Thad Young, Bogdanovich, like just guys that are like big bodies that can just hang and do multiple things on the court. And the Sixers just have so many guys who can't.
Yeah. Well, I will say that's what makes this offseason is enormous. And I don't want to look past this season. We'll get a little bit later, like, I guess, where they sort of sit on this season. But this offseason is enormous given and Elton Brand said this when he came to the Live Ricky, which, of course, buys him a full year. Which, by the way, Elton, only takes you to the beginning of next season, and then gloves are off. But once the Jimmy contract happens, whatever it is, like, let's some version of $30 million a year or $35 million, whatever it is, and then the Ben contract is on the books too, and the Embiid contract is on the books, their ability to just sort of like add via free agency or whatever goes like changes a lot. So I just think this offseason, if you're going to sign guys, because you look at Indiana and Oladipo's getting paid, but he's the only guy getting paid on that roster. And it does give you a little bit of wiggle room to sign Tyreke Evans for $12 million and whatever Bogdanovich, who will always score 50 points on us in my eyes, to pay guys like that who are over minimum, who aren't minimum guys, who are guys that are going to make between $8 and $12 million a year. I think this offseason is really, 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 really enormous for them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just think you have, like, to have gotten so, and this is a Colangelo thing, but to have gotten so nothing out of Jonah Bolden by now. To have gotten, right, like, absolutely nothing out of him. To not be able to really play Amir. You acquire Justin Patton, that's fine. Zaire is very unfortunate. Obviously, Fultz is his own thing. Korkmaz, you can see, like, maybe some value, but there's no way, even in any circumstance, he's right now ready to play like 30 minutes a night. And Shamit's been great, but again, another guy that shouldn't be playing more than like 20 a game. And
yeah,
Wilson Chandler played 30 minutes last night, and I think by accident recorded a couple stats, aside from just very physical fouls that he just did on every possession and just dared the referees not to call him every single time. And sometimes they didn't, and it worked okay, and he actually didn't. You know, I think he had the best plus minus of the team with zero. But there's just too many guys. Obviously, Redick isn't defending anymore. Whether he did in the past is one thing. And Redick hasn't been shooting well, which will change, obviously. But he can't be both. And then obviously Simmons has his limitations. Embiid hasn't been good from outside. There's just so many guys that. Jimmy Butler's the only guy that can do everything. He's the only one that can do everything that's on the court. And Embiid can also, but you don't really want him covering out the perimeter that much, and the way he's been shooting from the outside this season, still developing from out there. And you don't have those guys. I mean, like, again, look at the Pacers. They're not that good of a team. These guys are not like excellent guys, but Thad Young can do everything on the court. He can just do it, and he's not a great shooter, but he's capable. He's going to take it. Bogdanovich is an automatic shooter. He can put the ball on the ground a little bit. He can pass a little bit. Like,
he's a big body
that's hard to move. Yeah. Like, they just have guys, and it's not just them. Look at the Milwaukee Bucks, Tony Snell, Pat Connaughton, the corpse of George Hill, DiVincenzo. Like, there's just guys that are playable.
But again, only paying one guy. I mean, I'm just saying that's this offseason. I really think next year, like, is a go for it, win the championship year for the Sixers. Like,
you don't feel that way about this year?
No, I because I don't think they're close enough. I don't really buy the. I'm fine with them adding somebody in the middle of the season, whether it's through buyout or trade, but I think it's unlikely that a guy that they can add enough. It just, like, historically, adding guys midseason doesn't really catapult you to being a championship level team.
I mean, I don't know if you heard the Ilyasova and Bellinelli mention last year. It's ridiculous. it's a it keeps eating itself and just keeps shitting out the same takes no matter who is saying them. They're just absorbed and they go into Reggie Miller and then out of Reggie Miller's ass and then into Hubie Brown's mouth, and it just keeps doing the same fucking thing. We're never going to get rid of Ilyasova and Bellinelli. They're going to be talked about until the end of time, even as they struggle to do anything valuable on their respective teams.
I think the teams that they will be up against this year in terms of cohesiveness and returning players, and just like in Boston, Toronto, and Milwaukee, I find it hard to believe that. I just think the time to shoot for, with an offseason, with an opportunity for Butler and Embiid and Simmons to really, really understand each other. I'm like, look, if there's an easy move they can make this year that puts them in a better position, I'm all for it, right? Like, I don't think it's impossible that they come out of the East, but I think if you're really going to put, like, to bet on the best hand, I think next year is the hand to bet on. I would think.
Yeah, I hear that. My only counter argument is Embiid's healthy, and you just don't know if that's going to happen. I know he doesn't want to be seen as this injury-prone guy, but he certainly has serious injuries in his past. And when he's as long as he is healthy, you kind of just got to go for it. But I agree that the time with Jimmy, Ben, and Embiid, like, having developed together and having an offseason with them, having cap space to go get another guy or a couple guys and then fill out the depth, or decide you're going to trade, you know, the Sixers have a bunch of seconds. If they can trade Jonah Bolden and some seconds for Wilson Chandler for like two role players or two guys that can help right now, then you do it. Like, those kinds of things. You got to, I know that it's, they're in a weird position where they have like the only guy that would be able to make salaries match in useful trades, aside from, unless they're trading for guys who are super cheap anyway, is Fultz. Because if you trade Chandler, who I don't love, but if you trade Chandler, then you're losing another guy. Exactly. So, it's, you know, it all kind of works out in tandem. And despite the fact that you are allowed 15 roster spots, the Sixers have managed to have like zeros out of four or five of them. Whether it's because of injuries or futility or whatever. And they're just at a place where there's not that many ways in season to upgrade on them until, you know, buyout stuff and whether Fultz turns into something, whether it's him or someone they acquire for. Or just like, you know, you gotta hope somebody has like a trade exception that you can trade. The salaries don't have to be equal for, and all that stuff.
The caveat I should mention this is they could certainly make a trade this year for a guy who won't just be here this year, in which they give themselves a better shot this year and next year. Like that's certainly possible.
Which might be more possible because a lot of these teams that are bad have guys signed to bigger contracts that go beyond this year, and they want to get out of those contracts. So if the Sixers are like, look, that's, you know, as a bad example, Tim Hardaway Jr. is paid beyond this year, and the Knicks would love to, you know, get off that. So that might be a way to make that happen, but then it would hamstring the Sixers' ability to sign anybody else next offseason.
And they have to.
They still believe they can.
They have to really, like, last year and, you know, the Colangelo era was a bet on free agency in a lot of ways, and it did not work this past offseason. And the calculus of figuring out whether they should give themselves less flexibility during free agency or and add a guy or two guys or whatever that fills out their roster this year, or if they think they have the ability to land somebody big during free agency, which is they better be pretty sure that that's reasonably possible if they pass up an opportunity to make themselves better this year and next year for a free agency chance, because, you know, they did that last year, and we just see you know, how many guys are there really? Like, is Milwaukee letting Chris Middleton go anywhere? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Is Kevin Durant coming here? Probably not. You know, and once you get past those top few guys, you're overpaying somebody to come here. So, before we get to, we haven't even talked about last night's game yet. Before we talk about last night's game, Mike, I'm going to do something really, maybe disturbing to some people, but make a lot of sense to others when I talk about our sponsor, Big Barker Dog Beds. So I hear a lot of people say that they don't worry about getting their dog a good bed because, quote, the dog's not going to sleep on it anyway. It just sleeps on the floor next to it and so on and so forth. And because I don't have children, I just equate my dog to a child. And I just think to myself, like, if your kid just stopped going to school, would you stop, like, trying to get him to go to school just because he's not going to go anyway? Just like, he's not going to go anyway. Of course not. You have to do what's best for the people and animals you love. So what I would tell you is, here's the thing with Big Barker therapeutic dog beds. The bed is better for your dog to sleep on. It's better for the dog's joints as it's young, as it's older, as it gets older, as it goes into, you know, ages where dogs develop arthritis. Having the joints being supported while they sleep is important. There is a one-year guarantee on the bed, right? You have a year to return it. What I'm telling you is, if your dog hasn't slept on dog beds before, maybe it's because the dog has not had an opportunity to sleep on a Big Barker. Put the Big Barker down there, buy it, and if within a year the dog still isn't sleeping on the bed, then go ahead, send it back to Big Barker. They'll give you a refund, but it is worth a try. One of my coworkers and friends, Dave, had his dog Woody. He bought a Barker Jr. for Woody. Woody didn't sleep on it for months. Eventually, Woody started sleeping on the bed, and now Woody, happier dog, guaranteed happier dog. These beds are the highest quality you can get, way higher quality than you're getting in any pet store. And right now, through the end of the year, if you buy a Big Barker at bigbarker.com/Ricky, bigbarker.com/Ricky, not only will you be helping your dog, but you'll be helping dogs who need homes as well, as Big Barker will donate $50 for every bed to the Providence Animal Center. And how about this? If your dog does like it, the dog comes with a 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten.
The dog comes with a 10-year warranty?
Yes, the dog comes with a 10-year warranty. Everything you own, once you buy a Big Barker, has a 10-year warranty. The foam on the bed has a 10-year warranty. The foam won't flatten or they will replace it for free. Again, that is bigbarker.com/Ricky. bigbarker.com/Ricky. Big Barker dog beds.
Love, love.
Uninspired, Mike. Uninspired.
Like the Sixers effort last night.
Yes. Well, except for Embiid, there were flashes of last year where Embiid, we get into the biggest problem last night was defensively. I would say that the only two guys in the Sixers who last night and without Butler are average to above average defenders are Joe and Ben. Mm-hmm. And that gave them problems last night. But then the other thing that happens is they get into a close game in the fourth quarter, and they're basically doing this trade-off post-up thing between Ben and Embiid because they don't have any, without Butler, they don't have any perimeter creators. And, like, you know, Joel is maybe the best post-up player in the league, but it's still, like, only an okay efficiency proposition. And then in crunch time, it gets even harder to score in the post. And then they have one thing I have to put on Brett. I know his options are limited, but it really does seem like when Joel is posting up, like, Ben Simmons is within like 6 feet of him, which it seems like it makes it worse. I don't know if, like, Ben Simmons standing 7 feet behind makes any sort of difference because they're not going to push their guarding to him out there anyway. But I don't know. It was frustrating defensively the whole game and offensively in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can only watch on ESPN cause I'm out in LA. So
I watched on NBC Sports.
Oh, okay. So you didn't hear the Elliot Bellinelli stuff. It was
no. I, like, as soon as you started talking about it, I assumed you were watching the ESPN. Yeah.
But they cut to Brett for like an in the huddle situation, which is always fake and bullshit, and it's just they're saying things for the cameras because they can't, like, they're not going to talk about strategy or whatever when the cameras are on. But and it was late in the it was probably midway through the fourth, the game was probably tied or so, and it's like, this is a tough team. Don't let us stand. Don't let them stand us up. We need to move. Like, you got to be moving. The only way to like win this game is if is with movement and continuing to just like, you know, tire them out and just try to get open looks with movement. And then you throw the ball into Embiid and everyone stands there.
Yeah.
We've talked about this for a while, and you look at other guys around the league when the ball goes into the post, that there's down screens, there's action, there's back cuts, there's filling the lane, there's whatever. And with the Sixers, obviously Embiid's very good at it, so we don't need to, some of that is trickery that you don't need if you can just get him in there. But when the double comes, if he's looking the other way, he spins into the double team, or they knock it away, or force a tough shot. A lot of times he gets there, but they're not getting, they should be getting clean, open threes out of that. And they seem to not, because there's just not that much movement. And I've never seen, ever, tell me if you remember anything, but they have Simmons in the that baseline dunker spot.
Yep.
And, you know, he's occasionally gotten some putbacks out of like missed mid-range stuff, but I don't remember a single alley-oop from Embiid to Simmons in the post when they double him. I don't remember a single time that's ever happened.
No, I agree with you. And it doesn't seem like, now look, this is the challenge with Simmons, and unless you're just having him run laps around the perimeter, just trying to tire his guy out, they're going to have to figure something out, right? Because, well, look, you hope having Butler there changes things. But even like Butler at the end of games, when he's hit big shots, has been, you know, isolation buckets, but at least he can do it, right? Like that changes the entire equation of them on offense. You look at Ben's stats year to year, and like everything's exactly the same pretty much. And if there's one thing, you know, like it's sort of difficult for him in crunch time, because him getting fouled is something that like that they're not thrilled about. So he kind of just becomes like a decoy in some ways. And forgetting even about the jump shooting, like if his free throw percentage could be up around 70% or something, I think it would give them a couple of more options. But you're right, like I'm not a coach. I don't know what they could do offensively when Butler isn't in there. But I completely see what you're saying, in that everyone just sort of stands around and watches him. And you can't imagine that them standing around and watching him is any better than them moving. It can't be better. Like they're making the defense work and run around and account for you somehow has to be better than what they're doing. It has to be.
Yeah.
You know? And by the time the fourth quarter comes, like, you know, Embiid has done so much at that point, and is what I love for him to be in the sort of shape where he can like just, hey, Rebel, there he is. Me and Rebel this weekend. Would I love for him to be in this sort of shape where he can just like continue to dominate and all the way through? But like by the end of the game, the guy's got 40 and 22, and still everyone is standing around and watching him try to win the game on offense. It's just like everyone else has got to have some energy at the end of the game, and has got to move around, and they got to do something. And there's got to be something they can do other than some like top of the key dribble handoff, like, and screen from Embiid to Redick, like that two-man game to get Redick open. It's a nice play, but they need something besides that and an Embiid post up at the end of the game.
Yeah,
they need something.
Or they just have to, when Embiid's not in the game, just run like crazy.
Yeah.
And
yep.
And have Ben do what he did last year. I think they'd still do. I think it just probably, it seems like less, or it seems like they don't have the personnel to do that. Look, they were 9 of 36 from 3 last night. Like, if some more of those go in, then they probably win the game. It's frustrating to me. Not to harp on Wilson Chandler, but like, man, like what's he do? Like, what good stuff is it? He's not a great passer. He's like a below average every single thing, where he's not bad at it. And you can see like the outline of a good, like of a decent 3-and-D guy, of like a guy that can attack a closeout a little bit or be non-useless in the half court. But for whatever reason, whether it's his confidence or just the role they're putting him in, he's just sleepwalking on offense. He has no value whatsoever. Even if he gets the ball in the post against like a mismatch, it doesn't seem like he can do anything with that. And he's slow. He's not creative. I don't know. Maybe he used to be good. He's not anymore. And they just need more guys who can do some things, where it's not like three of the guys on the court can't shoot from the outside. So when they do exploit a double team and start swinging it around to find open guys, it's like, it's hoping that we get it to one of the guys who can actually shoot. And then some of the guys who can actually shoot aren't hitting shots. Muscala was 0-for-6. Redick was 4-of-12. Korkmaz was 2-of-7. And Beach was 1-of-6. It's just like, it's tough to win games when you have on either end of the court guys bringing you down. And the Sixers have too many guys like that. They're really a team that's held up by like a house of cards around these two and then three elite players. And they need to just get better guys. Find them.
Well, you talk about the role that that Chandler is, and maybe it's the role. I think it's that he has to play against other NBA players.
That might be it.
I think he's just washed. Like he's been declining for a few years, and the time to get Wilson Chandler was in the eighth or ninth year of his Nuggets contract, and not in the 15th. So. Yeah, it's a bummer. He would be much better at, like a lot of the guys in the 8-man rotation would be a lot better at 15 minutes a game than 30.
Yeah, and to that point, if you're not going to play Jonah Bolden in December when you have an 8-man rotation and Jimmy Butler's hurt, when are you going to play him? You played T.J. McConnell 29 minutes. He was okay. But exploitable on defense. Muscala was largely useless, but it just wasn't on offensively at all. You had to play him because you needed a backup center. They played Bennett backup center a good amount. That went okay. If you're not going to play, like Shake Milton's a rookie, he's getting his feet wet, whatever, and they played him for 3 minutes and then took him out and never put him back in. You gotta be able to play these guys. And if you're not, then... If Brett doesn't trust them, then like cut him, trade him for nothing. Have an open roster spot. See what Aaron Aflalo's got. See what Brandon Rush has got. Anything. Like you got to be able to find guys you can play, and not run these guys into the ground in a fucking meaningless game in December. It's gonna catch up to him.
Yep. And that to that point. Well, I agree with you on Bolden. Like the Milton thing is tough because he was hurt.
Right.
Leading up to the season.
Sure.
And NBA. And we've if you follow the NBA, you know. Teams barely practice once the season starts. So, like Milton's ability as a young player to even know what the Sixers are doing at this point and be able to run it the right way is probably pretty limited. Bolden, though, they should have a pretty decent idea of. And to that point about running them into the ground, like, okay, so the Pacers have won six in a row and have played well without Oladipo, at least well enough to stay afloat. The Celtics have now won eight in a row and have been missing, Jaylen Brown stretches of the season, Gordon Hayward stretches of the season. And now we're sitting in the fifth spot. And that it all comes back to what I was talking about like valuing this year. So the difference between the fifth spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs and the third in terms of who you're going to play in the first round is fucking like massive. Like sitting in the fifth spot or the fourth spot, you could very well be playing. You're going to have to play Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto, or Indiana in the first round. And in the fifth spot, you don't even have home court. But then you jump to third, and all of a sudden you're looking at Orlando or Charlotte
Detroit.
or Detroit, like a team that these are all teams that, you know, you might not sweep them, but I'm pretty confident they can beat. And, you know, like, I guess you really have to think, is running Embiid, Simmons, and Butler into the ground to get to that third seed because it's so much better. Is it worth it for this year? Because these are all guys. Simmons, I'm not worried about in that, like, he's young and also he's, like, he's not big. Like, I don't want to play anybody 40 minutes ago. I don't want to run Ben Simmons into the ground. But Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid, like, those guys are different stories at this point in, you know, Embiid just as a guy and Butler at this point in his career. It's a real decision they're going to have to make because the top half of the East is really, really good, you know? Just maybe, obviously, it doesn't have the Warriors in it, so it's not as, you know, it's not as good as the Western Conference is. But I would say beyond that is stronger than the West. So that's a decision they're going to have to make. I agree that they need guys somehow, and it does. Now, today is the day that they can trade for guys that signed this season. So maybe trades start happening today. And that was the beginning of that was the Ariza stuff last night. But we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Korkmaz sort of looked like a guy that it was okay that they didn't pick up his option on last night. Not great.
Yeah,
not great.
I mean, look, is he excellent? Of course not. He's not excellent. But he's a guy who can theoretically shoot. And will continue to get more confident. He can put the ball on the deck a little bit. He can pass a little bit. He's a smart player, and he needs to put on weight. It's the same book on him that it was when they drafted him.
And since last pod, too.
Since last pod, all the way back then. And I want him to play. I've always wanted him to play. He should be playing, especially in a world where JJ is struggling and Shamet is also somewhat struggling defensively.
And but, start him when Butler's out.
Yeah, that's brutal. So, I mean, Korkmaz should be playing like 10, 15 minutes a game. Like, he's a guy who could be like, yeah, we can, you know, we can play. He's an NBA player for 10, 15 minutes a game. But when he's one of three that are exploitable on defense, and then when TJ is one of three who can't shoot on offense, it's just like there's too many guys that can't do enough things. It seems like the Sixers are like just pin themselves down with specialists, and they're not even that special at the things they're supposed to be special at.
I want to get to some of this other stuff here. Do you want to talk about the? Did you read the Fultz story in the Post?
Yeah, I read it with like one eye closed.
Okay. Well, since no AU this week, AU is traveling this week. So we will make our discussion on the Fultz story. I'm sorry, Ben at Kinetic. Our discussion on the Fultz story is brought to you by Kinetic Skateboarding. Oh, come on. Like, Christmas is a fucking week and a half away.
Come on.
Get your loved ones some Converse or Vans or Nikes that you can't get anywhere else, or a skateboard or a Thrasher hoodie or something. KineticSkateboarding.com, 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. So Candace Buckner writes the story in the Post yesterday, which is overall, I would say, just sad mostly. We had, you know, I don't even know what this means anymore, but this is now the fifth writer who has referred to Raymond Brothers as something other than Markel Fultz's agent. Now, agent to a certain degree is if he's his lawyer and he's the one who is signing with him on contracts, the difference in being an agent is what Raymond Brothers is making, I guess, in terms of money. But it is sort of weird that now it was lawyer, and now representative, she wrote, which is, I don't even, it goes along with the whole weirdness of all of this. It really is I don't know. At the end of this, I feel everybody who is quoted in this, whether they are named or unnamed in this, and I wouldn't even be surprised if Raymond Brothers leaked some of this to Candace Buckner, because I think we were talking about this a couple weeks ago, and I sort of intimated that he was being maybe put in a bad position by people around Fultz. And all of the quotes just are sad in that as a any 20-year-old, whether they're going through what Fultz has gone through or not go through, any NBA player, there's a remarkable amount of pressure being that age in that situation. and the support system you have around you is like as important as anything else that you could ever have. And his support system around him is obviously not supportive and not great. And it's disappointing because it does seem like from Keith Williams to his teammates to the current front office of the Sixers, everybody seems to want to do the right thing by him. But his mom and whoever else around him makes it really difficult for them to accomplish that. And it's really sad.
Yeah, that's upsetting. I feel bad for him. I don't know what's going to change. Hopefully this diagnosis, whether you believe it or not, is helpful for him. Was it on the Reddick podcast with Jimmy Butler? I'm trying to remember, where they talked about like your circle getting smaller as you get older, as you get later in your career, and you needing to like cut some people out of your life. Was that?
Maybe. I don't remember.
I think it was. And they're just like, you know, there's bad influences on you. You hear about like, one example is that I've heard about is like, you know, New Orleans about, you know, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, like refusing to like accept his role is just like being like, go be Clint Capella. Like you're clearly talented enough to be this right. disruptor on defense and just rim run. But if there's somebody in his ear saying, you should have been the number one overall pick, you're better than this guy, you can handle the ball, you can shoot from the outside, like why aren't you doing this stuff? They should be running plays for you and stuff. And you know, you look at, I think he's found a role in OKC. I think Rashawn is another guy who is finally doing what he's like limited capable of doing in Phoenix. And some of these guys have people around, but prior to that, people have guys around them saying like, you know, that are just, whether it's from their childhood or just trying to talk themselves up and feel useful or whatever it is, whether they mean well or not. But you'd have just to like kind of cut that stuff out of your life so that you can, you know, contribute to a team and be the best player you can be and whatever it is. And I don't know who's in Fultz's inner circle and whether it's his mom and the strange things about surveillance cameras and signing NDAs and stuff is upsetting. But, you know, a lot of times things are going wrong and the clutches just get tighter when they should be getting looser. But, you know, you want to control it. You want to try to get it under control and help the kid out. I don't know. I you know, Embiid's quotes in there were nice. Everybody clearly cares about him. I have no idea.
Yeah, and you know the mom thing, and it makes her look, obviously the article paints her as being unhelpful to him basically. But like even moms, like I remember being when I was in school, I was younger, and if something wasn't going right for me in school, like I think a parent's initial intuition is to not think that it's the kid's fault, right? Like, what is wrong with these teachers, or what is wrong with the other kids in class, or and this is sort of an extreme version of this. And you know, he if he is sort of immature in general, and like is, you know, she sees like everything around him, and I would imagine her inclination as things get harder for him is, I need to protect him more. You know, like I need to be even like, I need to stand up for my son even more than I stand up for him now. And I don't necessarily think that like she's, this obviously isn't helping him, right? Like all of these things, but I can imagine being in her position, much like when we were talking about like Colangelo's wife, right? Like somebody who maybe wasn't doing the right thing, but didn't necessarily have the wrong, what's the word I'm looking for?
Intention.
and wrong intention. Like, she's like, well, if Drew Hanlon's going to work with my kid and everyone's talking shit about my kid, like, I'm going to have Drew Hanlon sign an NDA as to, like, what he – I don't want him talking about my kid without my permission. And I, it doesn't – I understand the and especially somebody who has not – she hasn't gone through any of this before. Like, she hasn't represented an NBA player before or dealt with Adrian Wojnarowski or all of the – not to call Woj a vulture, that's not what I'm saying, but like, to her, everybody is just profiting off of her son and, you know, and taking, and but nobody in her mind has his best interests at heart like she does.
Of course.
And I think, you know, that's whether it's LeVar Ball or KJ's mom or Rashawn Holmes's mom fucking letting me have it on Twitter, whatever it is. I think they're all mostly coming from a good place. So
I think that you hit the nail on the head, and we got to get Colangelo's wife and Fultz's mom in a room and just work this whole thing out.
Would that be the best live Ricky ever?
Oh,
all
my God.
Moms. KJ's mom.
The mom's edition.
Barbara Rattini. Would be absolutely amazing. While we're talking about interviews, did you read the Jimmy Butler GQ interview?
I did not.
Okay. There are two things that paint two sides of Jimmy Butler that I would like to. I don't want to go over everything. Everyone should read it because there are some funny quotes. One is like, I prefer that he didn't look up to Mark Wahlberg so much, I guess. but the quote that I want, like, just tattooed on me, that I think says everything about Jimmy Butler and, like, his desire to be maybe something that he will never be. And that is, like, an understanding, you know. Here it is. He goes, she asked him about books he's reading. And there's some book that he's reading about, like, the dangers of ego. I forget the name of the book. And he goes, I'm learning. That's why I'm reading. Ain't nobody perfect. I'm the furthest thing from it. But I feel like if I can read about it, I can be better at it. Now, will I change? Who knows? Have I changed? Damn right. Everybody does. Is it for the better? I believe so. Does everybody like it? No. Do I care? Fuck no. But I am who I am.
Yeah. Asking himself a lot of questions, answering the questions. Answering the questions with certainty.
Am I going to change? I have. Am I going to change? Probably not. Are you... I just fucking love it. You know, we talked about his appearance on the JJ podcast and his, like, attitude toward the Minnesota situation. And she goes, how would you handle the Minnesota situation differently? He goes, I think I did everything the correct way. I really think I did. For one, I didn't really go into the media and say anything out of the norm. I didn't even talk to the media. Me and Rachel Nichols had that interview set up weeks beforehand, so I didn't talk to the media, yet I did talk to the media immediately after.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to get into the whole thing, but nobody would have ever known what was said in practice or none of that if somebody wouldn't have told the media. I didn't tell the media. The Woj bomb came and everybody's like, he did this, he did that. So I'm like, well, now I got to talk about it. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about it if somebody hadn't said what I said and what happened in practice. And to me, it's like, why would you go tell anybody anyways? I don't know. Oh, and then the end is, it's like somebody may be out to get me a little bit.
I think they were back in Minnesota.
Yeah, probably.
Dude likes winning. Dude likes talking about how much he likes winning. Intense guy, interesting guy. I love him. The Wahlberg stuff is actually a really nice treat for me.
I talk to Mark Wahlberg all the time, and he's like super, super successful. So I'm just asking how. What the hell drives you to keep doing what you do? He'd just be spitting knowledge, man.
It's so funny when these guys love, like, you know, I don't think this was the case back in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, but now, like, there's, which I think is good that NBA players and athletes in general are more cognizant and aware and trying to just, like, get, you know, broaden their horizons and learn and all that stuff, whether it's reading or talking about, you know, from JJ talking about wine and watches and all the fun stuff and, like, talking to different people of different fields and whatever. But they often try to apply, like, all right, Mark Wahlberg is successful, and like this physicist is successful, and like right. this school teacher, she's successful. How do I like? I'm picking up all these things and the knowledge. I'm just trying to like be a better basketball player, and it's like I think you just gotta practice. I think practice, and maybe studying film. I don't know if yeah. I don't know if talking about looking at the horizons is gonna do much for you, but I do enjoy it.
Yeah. And then the other quote that I liked, would you still be there in Minnesota if you guys were winning? Now, there's a very small thing that I like about this quote, but I really enjoy it. He goes, man, to tell you the truth, I don't really remember what I had for breakfast or lunch or dinner in Minnesota, so I ain't even going back there. It's like most people would say, I don't even remember what I had for breakfast today. But he's like, look, I don't know what it would be like there. I don't remember what I had for breakfast there.
yeah.
That's not how the quote works. But all right, before we get to a quick around the league and a Lorenzo Brown mailbag, let's talk about the only legal sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, the only personal injury law firm in the Delaware Valley that is recognized as officially endorsed by the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, is Kornblau and Kornblau, the official lawyer of the process. I do wonder when the Sixers or Embiid are going to come after us for calling everything the official blank of the process. Luckily, we'll have Kornblau to fight it. And then I guess maybe because of what we do own the rights to, we can just call them the official blank of Lickface, I guess, is
great.
What you'd have to
what
do.
What a nice ring to it.
Yeah, you hear about a lot of personal injury law firms advertised. And the truth is that those are all big, giant law firms. I don't know if they're good, bad, or whatever. But when you call them, they're really just referral services, and they refer you to somebody else. It is a nameless, faceless proposition. But with Kornblau and Kornblau, who has been in the area since the 80s, started by Adam Kornblau's dad and mom, the Kornblaus, as they were, and now run by Adam and his mom, still the Kornblaus, is you're not getting shift off. You're not just calling a referral service. You're calling like the premier personal injury law firm in the Delaware Valley. And you know when you call up, you're going to get a Kornblau, no matter which Kornblau it is. We have heard from so many people who have called Adam for advice and gotten personal advice, whether he has a financial interest in it or not. He really is part of our community and wants to help you through what is likely going. Look, if you're calling Adam, you're hurt. One way or another, you're hurt, whether it's physically, mentally, or whatever, whether it's in a car accident or because of medical malpractice or whatever. And he knows that, and that's why he is going to be the most understanding, caring, and at the end of the day, best personal injury lawyer that you can find. If you think you have a case, if you've been hurt in a car accident, slip and fall, whatever, any kind of personal injury, give them a call or shoot them an email. Like I said, it doesn't cost you anything. 215-576-7200 and ask for Adam, or email Kornblau at kornblauandkornblau.com. The and is spelled out A-N-D in that email address. Kornblau spelled with a K. Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of the process. Okay. Were you following the Ariza stuff?
Oh yeah.
Last night.
Yeah.
So it was pretty funny. It was and then I wanted to do a quick Dave Silver thing. So Ariza was getting traded to the Wizards, who were giving up Kelly Oubre to the Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies believed they were giving up Marshawn Brooks and a second round pick. But the Suns thought they were getting Dylan Brooks and a second-round pick. And it wasn't discovered that they were getting a different Brooks than they expected until Woj started tweeting about it. They found out, and the deal died. It's unbelievable.
you wonder who is to fully blame. I've had experiences just in my career where it's like, there's just...
They're trying to pull fast one.
Yeah, just like, this person believes this person believes this. And it's like, okay, well, it all comes down to this conversation that this person had with this person, and they both have different versions of what they believe happened. And so to me, it's like, you know, there's probably an assistant somewhere who just fucked it up. And he or she is just like, oh, shit. Who the fuck cares? It's a Brooks. They're both the same. They're both guards. They play the same position. Does it really matter? And like change the whole trajectory of the league. Pretty good.
It does sort of the whole first round pick for Trevor Ariza thing doesn't seem like an actual thing after looking at what they were discussing. I don't know. He's going to get traded to the Wizards eventually. There was a story on ESPN.com this morning that the Suns and Wizards were talking about just doing it without without Memphis involved. So
I don't think he can come back from this. I think it's going to be somebody else. I think it's going to be somebody else. I think he'll end up going to like the Lakers or something.
He's got to retire now.
Yeah.
Trevor Ariza, yeah, it's in the CBA, actually. It's a little known thing in the CBA.
Because they told him, like, hey, go, you know, we're trading you, so just like go to LA and like chill out for a while you wait for the physical or something. And they're still not with the team. And he didn't get traded. He's like, this is a nice breath of fresh air that, A, the Sixers aren't involved in this. Just how nice is it that there's some crazy, ridiculous thing that we can just enjoy as purists without having to have the Sixers handle of it. Remember when they sent Okafor home to trade him and then brought him back?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Because that was the New Orleans trade that never happened, right?
That was rough. So I'm glad that the Sixers aren't... it's just nice to not be in the spotlight for once for your ridiculousness. But I do think he'll end up going to probably L.A.
The other ridiculousness happened when the Bulls, when they signed Jabari Parker, everybody was like, well, how is that going to work? And 25 games into the season after firing their head coach and having a mutiny with the interim coach, they're like, doesn't seem like the Jabari thing's going
to work. Oh, really?
So they've announced or indicated that he will no longer be in the rotation and they're going to trade him. Would you trade anything for Jabari Parker? It's 1 year, basically, because you can opt out of the second year, I guess. So would you trade for Jabari Parker on the Sixers?
No.
Not at all?
No. He's bad. He's bad. He's not good at really anything at all. In order to trade for him, you'd have to basically package Fultz and Chandler. That's not super interesting to me. I want Justin Holiday. I wouldn't mind Robin Lopez. To me, I'd rather do, if we're doing Chicago, I'd rather do a Bobby Portis and Justin Holiday for Fultz type trade, maybe with like a protected first, if they'd be willing. You know, that kind of thing. Just bodies. Bobby Portis, body. Justin Holiday, switchable body. Good 3-point shooter. Bobby Portis at least wouldn't kill the Sixers as much as he does. If he's on the Sixers, probably.
Who would he punch? Who would he be most likely to punch?
Good question. He has something against Euros, so I'd tell Korkmaz to prematurely buy a mask or something.
We don't have Furkan's option next year, so, I mean.
Yeah, punch him. Punch away, Bobby.
I would like to just quickly note, I noticed it as it happened, as for some reason I was watching NBA TV when it happened, but then the quote circulated the next day in regard to the Bulls. Dave Silver, the biggest liar in professional sports, said the other night, wait, hold on, let me find the actual quote. Oh, here it is. I'm very careful not to get involved in the operations of any individual team. Oh. That is, just a complete and total lie.
Mm-hmm.
He got involved in the operations of the Sixers as he personally connected Josh Harris with Jerry Colangelo. He admitted as such, which then basically was the first step to basically Dave Silver making the Sixers remove their general manager or go up against him and the rest of the league to keep him. Which seems like him being involved in the operations of any individual team. Even more, I don't know if you saw it. Did you see Tom Haberstroh's story on like the NBA's battle to get part of the revenue for NBA gambling?
No.
Like the a very important gambler guy, I guess, said that the NBA knowing about the LeBron James wrist injury in the finals, hand injury in the finals, and not disclosing it just proves that they're not trustworthy, and that's why they should not get a piece of any of the gambling stuff. Like, all of this goes back. I will keep repeating this. His fraudulent effort to get rid of tanking. By the way, the NBA has the same number of horrible teams as it always has. Teams are knowingly not playing players that they have that would be better than the players they do have. You know, like the Cavs not playing Korver, and like all of this fucking stuff is still going on. It is all because of money, because Dave Silver wants the NBA to get more money, to get a piece of the gambling business. He's a liar. He's a fraud, and he is still skating along on the one good thing he did, which was the most fucking obvious thing in the world to do, and that was to get rid of Donald Sterling.
Yeah.
So he's a fucking fraud.
Fuck you, Dave.
Dave Silver.
Weber should have assassinated you when he had the chance.
So this goes back, if you're just listening to this, Mike Weber, the Spike Lee of the Right Ricky Sanchez podcast, a well-known but not Oscar-winning screenwriter.
Oscar-losing.
Oscar-losing screenwriter basically approached Dave Silver while he was here at a Sixers game.
Accosted.
To shout... Yeah, accosted him, shouted him for his role in getting rid of Sam Hinkie. The pictures are on the internet. Just tweet at us. We'll tweet them back to you if you want. Obviously, Silver looks disturbed while Weber is doing this. What part of Silver thought that Weber was going to get violent, do you think?
Weber's like, a pretty small man. Even when he's angry, he still looks such a sweet boy out of it. Not advocating violence. Don't hurt Dave Silver.
No, please don't.
Let him live in the confines of his own guilty mind.
I'm just going to go right. I don't really love the mailbag questions today, so I'm going to go right to the jigsaw.
Let's do it.
Okay. A jigsaw. Here we go.
Play.
I will play this game.
Game play.
I will play this game.
I miss you.
I will play this game.
I'm worried. Play.
I will play this game.
And after the game, they were interviewing him, and they said, how does it feel to win the ultimate game? And he said, if it's the ultimate game, why are they playing it again next year?
If this is your first time listening, Jigsaw is where I give Mike two options. They're both terrible, but he has to pick one. I'm pretty proud of this one, Mike. Option number one. For the rest of your life, the first thing that people need to think of you, and you have to buy into this at least publicly, and you have to help them think this, the first thing, no matter who you're talking to, has to think, man, he's the biggest Will Ferrell fan I've ever met. Like, that has to be the first thing. Not that you're good at your job, good looking. The very first thing is, man, that guy fucking loves Will Ferrell.
Okay.
That is option one. Option two is you go blind in one eye and deaf in one ear.
Oh, Will Ferrell. All day.
Really?
Yeah, all day. Will Ferrell's great. I mean, he's gotten a little, he's run his course in some respect, but he's very funny. Good producer, has a bunch of stuff. Absolutely. Oh, by the way, Phoenix is trading Trevor Ariza to Washington for Oubre and Austin Rivers.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blind in one eye, deaf in one ear. Are you kidding? Just to be Will Ferrell fan? I mean, I think if you say Wahlberg, then we start to get questions. If you start to say, like, worse guys, absolutely. But as far as Will Ferrell goes, like, I'd be fine. Look, people know me right now as the guy who fucking does the process thing. Like,
yeah,
that's right. Not much better than this.
So that was the impetus for this, is that I think I've mentioned on the pod before that I was at a Sixers game once with Amos, and it struck me. I said, man, I'm fucking 40 years old, and the thing that people know me the most for is I like the Sixers. Like, what a weird thing. But being like an obsessive Will Ferrell fan is so strange. Like, you're not worried that it would paint you in a light?
Okay. No, I think he's very talented and measured.
This is not a slight on Will Ferrell.
Well, If you would pick someone else, I could see how being known for that as like a fan of just this one like problematic person. If it was like known as like the big Chris Brown fan, that'd be tough. Wouldn't be down for that. But yeah, Will Ferrell would be okay. But I like okay. my eyes and ears.
Okay. All right. Reserve your spot on Fly the Process, and I don't have anything else really. Let's see if the Sixers do anything today that ruins the podcast. Hope not. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know. Leg face.
We are the murderous pair. That went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Jew runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cup on the clouds on a missile to try.